Twisted Roots by A.G. Parker. Read by A.G. Parker. Chapter 13. And hand in hand on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon. Edward Lear, The Owl and the Pussycat. How's it going then, Tom? The sky was sallow grey, and Elliot had driven through the day's long hours from the old lighthouse to where his van was now parked on the driveway of Tom Whitley. Both he and his vehicle looked worse for wear. Penny Jane phoned and said there's been something up with my pipes. Tom Whitley knitted his eyebrows together and sucked the yellow dusk air in through his teeth. You not been by the house yet?
Thought I'd pick you up first.
Ah, you trust my judgment, I see.
I trust the best and only plumber in the village when he tells me I got a burst pipe.
Oh, flattery won't get you a discount, Elliot, he chuckled.
Let me get my things together. I'll follow you.
I'll get a pot of tea brewing. Tom laughed. I wouldn't count on it. Elliot swung himself into the driver's seat and felt the miles of road he'd put behind him leech at his bones, and suddenly the journey home seemed longer than 5 minutes. He'd rounded the corner of the main street before he heard Tom's engine growl to life and the plumber's van's tyres roll out of the drive. And then he was on, out of the village centre and nearing the woods that bordered the road that led to home. It felt an age since he'd been there. The sun had started to creep down behind the hills, and to his right, Elliot saw its glow flutter auburn on slivers of the woods and burn the ground at the feet of trees of rusted amber. He had the window open, the scent of summer grazing his face and teasing his hair. Then, through the window's open jaws, came the cry of crows. His eyes followed the sound to the right of the road, where trees met tarmac at the foot of the hill. It was lined with a darkness that was dense and watchful, black shadow sentinels with bright metal eyes. Elliot slowed. They seemed to be waiting. The van juddered to a halt, the ratchet of the handbrake bringing the road through the woods to silence. Behind the line of crows, the woods went on, stretching up into the hillside. But to the left, where their mirrored counterparts should stand, there was nothing but white mist. White obscured the trunks. All white. Like the clouds had sunk to the ground and the world was all the wrong way up. Elliot's only reference point was the very tip of the canopy, a thumbnail strip separating the white of the forest realm from the clouds of the sky above. And then it, too, was gone. Elliot studied the blank mass. The village, situated as it was in a scoop of land between hills, often found itself cloaked in mist and fog, particularly when autumn had taken hold. But this didn't feel right to him. It behaved differently. It behaved. He shook it off and put his paranoia down to being road tired. His hand reached for the gear stick and he allowed the van to move up to second as he switched on his high beams. The mist began to curl outwards from the tree line. It reached out onto the road. It began to seep towards his van. Elliot laughed at his own jolting reaction as the crows took to the sky like sudden splashes of ink thrown into the grey heavens. The engine stalled. He took a deep breath, steadied. Elliot knew the woods, and he knew human nature. He knew how people panicked and lost themselves, familiar routes distorted under the lens of fear. The mist had closed behind him now, like skin healing up over a wound. Elliot fumbled to restart his engine, telling himself he was only anxious to see home, but there was only a repeated rasp that led once more back to that overwhelming silence. He leaned back in the driver's seat, hands smoothing along the steering wheel, and listened. Noises from the village filtered around in the mist, contorted and echoed and amplified like kaleidoscopic images. He tried the ignition again. Nothing. He heard a rumble of tyres and engine behind him and flashed his lights. Hey, Tom! The rumble slowed, like thunder falling asleep. Elliot opened the van's door and stepped out onto the road he couldn't see. Tom, my van's given up. Too much for one day, I think. Well, for both of us. Fancy giving us a ride? Elliot strained his ears. But there was no response. Only, in the distance, a peal of church bells. Tom?
But he couldn't even hear the church bells now. The mist had grown so dense that Elliot was sure that if he let go of the driver's door, he'd lose his van.
Well.
He reached into the glove compartment and felt for the flashlight. He tried to force this to be casual, a normal event, but fear had struck his vocal cords, and he heard it in himself.
Looks like it's the long way round.
He pushed the van door closed behind him and pocketed the keys. He'd left his hazards on, and their muted orange flash hardly dented the white. But it felt to Elliot like a silent scream, a warning, for him to go back to his van, to not leave his one point of reference and safety in a deformed world of mist and uncertainty. The woods were cotton thick and quiet as he stepped off the road and into their silence. The fireplace was cold stone and grey open mouth, but the sun burned on the clifftop around the lighthouse, and the cool of the living room offered welcome sanctuary.
Can we talk now?
Lorna looked up from her work and plastered a smile on her face.
Where's Jacob?
Layla shrugged.
I think he's upstairs. I sort of lost him after lunch.
My dad? She walked around the table and looked at the herbs strewn across it. Lorna had picked a selection and pressed them into a bunch in her hands, which she was looping around with thin red cord. At each turn, she paused to pull the thin red line tighter around the bundle.
He left a note. He's had to head back to the village. Something about burst pipes.
Layla felt a knot in her stomach tighten. She watched as the chaos of colour, purples, reds, greens, were woven into a thick, tightly packed stick. Her aunt glanced up.
He'll be okay. The moon's waxing, so the witch has no power.
She continued, occasionally flicking the length of cord around one extended finger until only an inch remained to be bound, like a sun-tinged oil slick at the tip of a torch head. Layla raised an eyebrow, surprised by her aunt's matter-of-fact claim. The cat appeared in the doorway. Lorna gave a slight bow of her head and smiled as he trotted off up the stairs.
Now then, she said, leaving the red thread and herbs. Let's talk.
At school, Elliot had learned that heaven existed in the sky, a kingdom in the clouds. And so, as a boy, if the day brought mist, he'd be terrified to leave the house, afraid that he would inadvertently step into the afterlife and death would snap him up. His mother, somewhat differently minded to the school, had at every opportunity afterward taken him out into the woods and mountains, in all conditions, until he was at ease trekking across barren ridges above the clouds and in dense forest, or marshlands beneath the stars, navigating the land with a healthy respect for the wilds, and not one bit afraid of death or stumbling into heaven by mistake. The tarmac's uniform flat gave out to the uneven floor of the woods. Leaf and twig rustled and cracked underneath Elliot's step and provided him with his only orientation. The mist felt dense as he breathed in.
Fog?
He couldn't remember what the difference was. He'd tried to keep heading west from the road and hoped that soon he'd either hit the boundary to the house or something else he'd recognise that would lead him home. He crept on through the trees, pressing his palms into rough bark to steady himself, and made sure with each step that the ground underneath was solid enough to take his weight. He asked himself if perhaps his slow movement was because he wanted his footsteps to be inaudible, undetectable. A cracking from the woods made him stop. Elliot held his breath, waited, his ears pricked and head turned with blind eyes in the direction of the noise. The woods were silent too, listening. Bracken and undergrowth snapped. The sound cut Elliot on his back like a bite of static.
Hello?
He called. He noted how the mist clamped those tentative syllables into its white. More creaks and cracks struck out from where he supposed the trees stood. Elliot felt the pounding of his heart in his ears, its drumbeat growing louder and more erratic, and the shape of his breath following into disturbed disorder. He told himself not to panic. Panic leads to rash decisions and that'll get a person lost. He slowed his breathing and checked his phone for signal. He wondered whether Tom Whitley would still be there by the time he got back to the house and then allowed himself to grumble about how tedious it would be if he missed him. He almost smiled to himself in those woods, in the mist, at the bizarreness of it all. He checked again, but his phone screen showed no bars. He hoped Tom would wait. And then, as his eyes slid from the phone to the ground, he saw something slither. "Follow me home," it said. Creaks of splintered trees echoed like laughter around the wood, and a wild thing yipped in pain. And Elliot knew then that the words he had heard were as real as the sounds in the woods, and that something was here, and it was calling to him. "Follow me," it said. "Follow me." And he followed. Layla followed her aunt to the foot of the stairs. "You asked me about portals?" Lorna ushered Layla behind her so that they stood on the bottom stair, facing down into the living room. Layla recalled standing next to Jacob at the foot of his staircase, daring each other to jump from higher and higher steps until Jacob had broken his collarbone. "In our tradition," her aunt continued, handing Layla her walking stick, "we call them doorways." Layla watched as her aunt spread her hands through the empty space before them. Her fingers seemed to catch on something in the air, and suddenly the image of the living room was split in two, like a curtain had opened in the world. "You can find the threads that make up the world's fabric and drag open the seams." The opening was a doorway, a portal, and it brought shadows, cold stone, and the smell of damp. Layla felt her stomach lurch as she realised that she was now simultaneously at the foot of one staircase and the top of another. "That's a fixed doorway," her aunt said, her breath sounding slightly more laboured. "It's easier, or rather energetically cheaper, for me to have a permanent hidden doorway than to have to go through the process of making a new one every time. This one's getting a bit tatty. I'll have to reseal the edges soon, or it'll collapse." Lorna prized the walking stick from Layla's fingers and stepped through the portal, ducking her head under its arched roof. She beckoned for Layla to follow, which she did, albeit with hesitance. Once through, the doorway started to seal behind them, its edges disintegrating, crumbling in on themselves, the particles reforming as old stone in darkness. "Where are we?" asked Layla. The closed portal took with it the light. In the perfect darkness, waves crashed and shuddered somewhere above or around, and the scent of sea stung her nostrils in the salt-hardened air. Layla heard the scuff of a match. Its light threw itself against the sides of the stairs, and Layla saw roughly hewn rock around her. "Are we underneath the lighthouse?" her aunt walked on. "We are very far from anywhere you know at all. Watch your head." The steps turned to uneven floor, the roof of the passageway cut down sharply, forcing Layla to crouch to pass. Her aunt's voice had lowered, and Layla heard whispered incantations. As she rose out of the passageway, shadows shifted and dispersed. A light source bled out into the space. Layla stared at it. A saucer of hollowed blue glass hung, suspended by woven silver threads. A dazzling white orb burned, cradled in its recesses, and to Layla it looked as though someone had plucked a star from the night sky and held it captive there, cupped in deep blue. "There's an elder lodging perched on a rock in the middle of an ageless sea. We're in the depths of the island on which it stands, underneath its secrets." The starlight caught every corner. It looked as though dipped crimson stone had made the cave. Solid fingers hung like pendants, almost mirror-cast reflections of the floor-grown towers that stretched and rose to meet them. The outer walls rose upward into shadow, ending in a place that Layla could not see, and neither starlight nor firelight touched its limits. In the core of the room, half swallowed by a ring of stalagmites, was a bright hearth in which a steady fire burned. "It's beautiful," Layla breathed. Her aunt smiled and turned to a large wooden cabinet. She leant her staff against the cabinet side and removed two mugs from the shelves and began plucking herbs from drawers and jars and filling a copper kettle with water. "I thought it was incredible the first time I saw it." She hung the kettle over the fire and gestured to the back wall, which Layla's curiosity hadn't had a chance to take in. Under a mouth of rock there was a crescent of red sand, and in its arms, a pool, serene and flawless.
The lagoon leads out to the ocean, should you be able to hold your breath so long as to swim it? She threw a handful of pebbles into the water, the stones falling with a soft plonk, ploosh, ploosh. Electric blue sparked. Magic, Layla said. Not quite, her aunt laughed. Bioluminescence. Layla scooped a handful of sand and poured it into the water. An underwater flow glittered downward to where it hit the lagoon floor, making it seem as though it were made of starlight. They're plankton, living creatures. Remarkable, isn't it? Layla nodded. But we didn't come here for that, did we? Said Lorna, the words uttered gently but the accompanying smile not hanging quite right about the cheeks, making Layla acutely aware of their isolation and the insurmountable distance from anywhere familiar. She felt the butterflies in her stomach stir, and she realised that while she didn't trust her aunt, she might be closer to getting answers now than she'd ever been. They left the lagoon, Lorna motioning to where cushions perched on woven rugs beside the hearth. As Layla sat, Lorna poured hot water from the kettle into the mugs and handed her one. Thanks, she said. You're going to tell me about the witch. Who is she? Show me the letter first. Layla bit her lip. You will tell me afterwards, she said, reaching into her pocket to finger its bent ears. Yes, yes. Come on then, let's have a look. Lorna's eyes flitted over the pocket that Layla's hand fumbled in. Give it to me. Layla felt her lips dry and her tongue stick to the roof of her mouth. She drew the letter from her pocket. I'm not sure. Lorna snatched the paper from her fingers, her hand trembling as she tore the envelope and ripped the edges and creased deep folds into the letter with a fearful grip. Is this it? Lorna was shrugged inside a skin of mania. Layla nodded. This is all she gave you, nothing more. Lorna's voice had turned high and strangled. She turned the paper over and over in desperate hands. Spittle flew from her mouth. Layla shrank back. Nothing? She said again in that cracked voice. No, that's all that came. I haven't touched it. I haven't opened it, I swear. Damn! Lorna put her head in her hands and let loose a muffled howl. Her body, curled over itself, remained eerily still for some moments and then, as though jerked upright by some compelling force, she stood, eyes wild and jaw clenched. She picked up Layla's mug and dashed it against the wall of the cavern, the contents hissing as they spattered out. What was that? Layla dragged her eyes from the smouldering shards of the mug and looked up at her aunt, who now stood, defeated and weary by the fire. When Lorna spoke, her lips trembled into a smile. I lose everyone. She eased herself once more to the floor, looking suddenly pained. Your mother, my husband, I lose the ones I love. I get left behind. And when they return, they are not the same. There is something unfinished about them. She looked at Layla at last. Your mother's final request was to make you forget, make your father forget. And I thought perhaps even now, if I bound your magic or removed it, the witch wouldn't be able to find you and you could be happy. And I'd have fulfilled the one thing my sister asked of me. She glanced sadly at the paper in her hand. But she doesn't want that now. She wants tradition. Layla put her hand on Lorna's arm. What does it say? Take a look for yourself. She reached for the paper, gently easing it from Lorna's grip. Lorna, she needs you. Help her remember. Help her know who she is. 15 years and that's all I get. She began dabbing the dark crescents under her eyes with her sleeve. And I know that message would have exhausted her magic, but... Lorna turned to Layla, eyes blazing. Wait, you said something on the beach. You said she's barely said anything. Layla felt the heat rise in her face. I've seen her, she blurted. My mum, she appears sometimes, though she doesn't say much. I thought you knew. Lorna shook her head. So that's what it was, she said, now staring into the fire as though the chaos of the flames might help her order her thoughts. I felt her,
but I thought it had to be you or some sort of echo. I thought I was losing my mind. She shook her head again, the fragility gone. So she's back. Only for a few minutes. Leila traced the words on the paper, wondering if her mother's handwriting was the same as it had been before her death. She never has time to say much. Where? Where is she? When does she appear? Every word surged out before being reined in, as though each time Lorna opened her mouth, her heart could spill onto the floor. There's a ruin on the outskirts of the village. I know it. Every third hour, a few minutes before the church bells ring out, there's another set of bells. I can't see them, but it sounds like they're coming from the ruins, like an echo of the bells that used to be there. My mum, she appears in the few moments between.
Between the past and the present.
Yeah, although it's not all the time, it's only some days, she said, and felt an echo of hurt. Lorna, was that... Were you going to poison me?
No. She spread her hands, ready to justify, to fight, and then crumpled.
My sister, that promise, it was all I had left of her. I'd never do anything to hurt you, but I'd tear this world down if that's what she asked me to do.
She raised her eyes to Layla's. I'd make you forget if she asked me to.
Layla sat quietly, mulling it all over. It was almost unthinkable that she could have come so close to being ignorant of it all once more, to losing her mother again. But Lorna was all she had. She studied the lines of her face, more deeply etched now than she had seen in the memories of the hearth fire.
Will you help me?
Lorna heaved in a breath.
I'll help.
Elliot heard the skulls of dead creatures crunch under his boots. He was stumbling forward, hands outstretched. He feared what could be behind rather than what lay ahead of him, and so he lurched wildly from step to step, trying to outrun his imagination. His fear pushed him onward through the trees, blind step and ragged breath guiding him. The mist was closing in on him now, scratching at his face and lungs, and he was running, not feeling the impact of branch and leaf and thorn as he fumbled through their tangle. On and on he ran, convinced that should he stop he'd be a dead man, that death would find him in the trees and mist, and that up ahead, impossibly, he'd find shelter, he'd find home. And then, a light. It burned through the mist with a jaundiced yellow glow. Elliot latched onto its beam and hurried, helter-skelter for the light. And the toe of his boot dug into something hard and unbending, and the heels of his hands found the burning greys of tarmac. Tom Whitley's laughter rumbled down at him.
Hey, slow down there. You can't run in this weather. Visibility's a goddamn joke.
He outstretched his hand and reached out from the mist.
You all right?
Elliot let Tom haul him to his feet and rub the bridge of his nose.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He looked back and saw the mist hanging thick and low beneath the treetops. He'd circled back around to the road. Tom Whitley's van was parked with full beams blazing next to his own abandoned van.
Just need some sleep, that's all.
His mind felt an unexpected horror curl over and nest into his thoughts.
Mind if we take your van, Tom? My engine needs a rest. So do you, it seems. I'll give you a lift back, but let's save taking a look at that pipe till tomorrow, huh?
Elliot gave a grim nod. He felt his friend looking sideways at him as he slammed the passenger door closed behind him.
Tell me, does she appear around the same time as the deaths?
I hadn't thought about it, I guess.
Jacob's dad. That was recent, wasn't it? How many days ago now?
Nearly a week. 6 days ago, I think.
Her aunt nodded and gave a rough grunt. The new moon. She spoke almost to herself. There's a grace period around the new moon. 3 days which lend themselves to a gathering of energy. It should be a resting time, a healing time. But it's also when the land is at its darkest, unwatched. It's during this time that things can slip through the gaps. And it would appear that during these 3 days is when both your mother and the witch can gather enough energy to manifest themselves physically,
The witch to kill and your mother to warn you.
Layla felt a slick river of ice in her stomach. Are you saying they're linked?
Your magic has gone uncontrolled for years. It's seeped into the land. The witch has used it to regain her power. Your mother, I don't know. Perhaps her return is triggered by a combination of your magic and the witch's. But they've both used you to get a foot back in this realm.
She paused, allowing Layla to absorb the information before she spoke again.
Layla, the witch has a connection to you.
Heart pounding, Layla could barely stammer out the words.
So let's unconnect me.
She felt sick. She wanted it out.
It's not that simple. If we tried to do that now, the witch would overpower you. There's a chance she'd take over your body and you'd be nothing more than a vessel, trapped. And then the witch would be free to walk the world and do whatever she likes.
Her brow knitted and she idly flicked at a piece of ash that had fluttered onto her sleeve.
No, you need to learn to control your magic. It'll stop her from taking any more, from getting stronger.
Chaotic bursts of colour swam around Layla's head. She couldn't focus.
No, she said. No, no, this isn't happening. This isn't real.
Numbness crept up her cheeks. The thought that the witch, the thing that had killed Jacob's dad and Sam, was inside her, connected to her somehow, was too much to bear.
It's not happening.
Layla, I'm so sorry. This can't be easy.
No, no, I'm going home. None of this is real. It's fine. It's fine.
She stumbled from the fire to the passageway, her shoulders and elbows catching glances of rough stone.
Let me out. I need to find Jacob. Let me out.
She was scrabbling at the stone, trying to open the doorway that led back to the lighthouse and its living room. She could hear her own voice shouting, "Let me out!"
Layla, look at me. Look at me.
Lorna clasped Layla's hands and tried to hold her from throwing herself against the impassive stone.
You're going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Listen, I promise.
She locked eyes with Layla.
We can do this. You can do this. It won't be easy, but I know you can.
They sank down onto the rock, Lorna cradling her niece's head in her arms. Eventually, Layla spoke, her voice quiet.
My mum, you said she can only do so much, that it uses her magic.
Do you think she'd spend more time with me if she could?
Oh, Layla, said Lorna, softening. You were everything to your mum. She'd move the universe to spend more time with you.
Inside, the confines of the van shrank. Elliot watched in the wing mirror as the sight of his van disappeared from view.
Tom cleared his throat. You sure you're okay, Elliot? That was a terrible business with Don.
Elliot grunted. He watched the white as they rolled past, almost inscrutable shifts. Shadows? Shapes?
Blood on bone and mist, he thought.
Why did he think that?
Coined are you to take in young Jacob, especially after all that happened with Layla. Man said, if there's anything we can do, just give us a call. You know where we are.
Blood on bone and mist.
Yeah, sure. Hey, Tom, could you let me out here? I think I could use a walk, being cooped up in one of these all day.
Are you sure? I got to drive past yours anyway.
Blood on mist.
Yeah, drop me here. My legs need the stretch.
It's watching me.
The door had clunked open before the wheels stopped turning. Hey, Elliot, your flashlight.
It's watching me. It's watching me.
End of chapter 13.
Twisted Roots was published by Wild Wolf Publishing and is available on Kindle via Amazon or as a downloadable PDF via my website. The links for both of these are in the description of this podcast. You can follow me on social media at twisted_roots_agparker or a_g_parker on Instagram. Please head to my website for other details and to keep updated with my poetry, performances, fiction, articles, and more.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest chapter of Twisted Roots and that you tune in next time.